folks. Welcome to the Alt Accountant Podcast, formerly known as Art of Advisory Podcast. I am your co-host, Hector Garcia from Quick Bookkeeping, joined by the other co-host, Kirk Bowman from Art of Value. Hey, Kirk, how are you?
I'm doing good, Hector. How are you? I think the word co-host implies there's at least one other, right? It's there just by definition.
I always get tripped up with the whole co-host thing. So, Kirk, what are we going to talk about this week?
We're going to talk about why you need a manifesto. And we're going to use an example of someone we admire, somebody we have interviewed on both this show as well as my podcast. And his name is Blair Enns. His business is Win Without Pitching. And he built his business on a book called The Win Without Pitching Manifesto. And in the manifesto, he outlines, I think it's 12 principles by which he operates his business and by which he believes anyone that hires him for consulting or training should operate their business by. Essentially, it's his playbook. He says, this is how I'm going to do business. Now, you might think, wow, 12 principles, that's going to be a long book. It's actually not. It's a quick read. I think it's a book you can read in a couple of hours, but I actually believe that everybody needs a manifesto because by going through the process of writing a manifesto, it helps you further define, hone, and refine your positioning. In fact, on the last episode, we were talking about how full service is actually no service. This exercise of writing a manifesto actually takes you to the other extreme. You have to think about why you're different, or let me rephrase, how you're different and why each of those differentiations matters. And you have to be able to articulate it. And one of the things that I've always loved is if you want to try something, teach it. And I think that principle applies to writing a manifesto. What are your thoughts on Blair's manifesto?
Well, first of all, Blair's book is fantastic. Win Without Pitching Manifesto. You should look it up in Amazon. It's probably under $25 or so. The 12 principles, I don't know why he picked 12. Maybe that's, you know, going down the list of all his values and things that he believes on. It ended up being 12. I've started drafting mine, and we'll talk about mine in a different episode. And I'm down to like a fifth or a sixth principle. And it doesn't have to be 12, but as we go through them, I think this will make tons of sense. The one thing that the manifesto will help you is number one, if this manifesto is internal, that means no one outside your organization looks at it or reads it, or it's public information. The manifesto itself allows you to go back and look at your north. And when you're confused about what decision to make, you always go back to one of the sort of the manifestos, and this will allow you to make a decision because you've already made the decision that these were the principles you were going to go by. I'll give you a perfect example. If you don't eat oysters, doesn't matter in what context, in what restaurant, what best friend will come to you and say, you have to try this oyster. This one will change your life. X, Y, C. You say, I don't eat oysters by principle. This is who I am. This defines you. You're a non-oyster eater. Right, so the manifesto will be kind of like that. We all have our own internal principles that we already made the foundational decision that in life I will carry myself this way and not carry myself that way. That's what a manifesto does. Now, if the manifesto is in a company that has team members, what the manifesto also allows you to do is it allows you as a leader to be present, coaching your team members, even if you're not physically there, simply by guiding them back to those principles. So it allows you to sort of extend the vision and the direction of your company and the decisions that you will make, what you will do, what you will not do, based on those manifestos. And lastly, if the manifesto is open to the public, that means your customers can read it on a website or read it in your signature or watch or hear you talk about it in a podcast or in a video, whatever. If they see that, not many professionals have a manifesto. So folks are very attractive to people that say what they're going to do before they do it and commit to doing something before they're in the position to have to do it. because when you say you're going to do something or not going to do something, you're creating a public commitment, and people attract themselves to public commitment. So that's why everybody needs a manifesto, whether you're a service professional or even in your personal life. And I think after we go through them, it'll make tons of sense.
Well, and I'm not necessarily suggesting that we go through the proclamations in Blair's book. What I'm suggesting is we talk about the concept of having a manifesto and writing your own manifesto. And by the way, I called them principles. He actually calls them proclamations. And I think proclamations is a better word. A proclamation is a declaration. It's announcing something. And so we'll give a couple examples, but we're not going to go through all 12. But you used a phrase that I love. Well, which way is north, right? And that comes from the idea that, you know, if you're lost in the wilderness, you need a compass. The compass should show you which way is north. And at least by having one bearing, it gives you the fundamentals you need to try to get unlost, if you will, or, you know, get back to where you need to be, get back to the trail. But if you don't know where north is, how can you get yourself out of a situation when you're lost? And a manifesto helps you do that. Manifesto, in some ways, is writing your own map, right? It is putting together and saying, okay, and I think a manifesto, first you have to decide who you're going to serve. I don't think you can write a manifesto before you decide who you're going to serve, because if you write a manifesto and then you figure out you're going to serve somebody and that manifesto doesn't fit, you've got to start all over again. So manifesto, I think, is drilling further down when you're narrowing down specialization, like we talked about on the last episode. But the idea that a manifesto is going to help you drill down, and it's going to help you determine what are your differences. I'm rereading Tim Williams' book, Positioning for Professionals, right now. And one of the things he points out early on is the idea that it's not being better that makes a brand, it's being different that makes a brand. In fact, if you have a choice between being better and being different, I'd rather be different. Because being better is hard to perceive. Being different is easy to perceive. And a manifesto is a written proclamation of why you're different. And that's why a manifesto matters. What are a couple of your favorite proclamations from this book, maybe is to use as examples?
Yeah, sure. I just wanted to add something. What you were saying just now about Tim Williams' positioning book, different is better than better. You have to say it a couple of times. Different is better than better. Different is better than better. Because it's a really cool play on words, because you got better than better. Different is better than better. Because better means that you can actually measure the difference between you and someone else. Because better, it's a comparative. The word better is a comparative word. And the word different is not comparative because it's different. So when
is a contrasting word.
Correct. When people conflate concepts, you say, yo, you're comparing apples and oranges. You're not comparing green apple with red apple. So what we don't want you to be is the red apple to the green apple. We want you to be the orange to the apple, because then it becomes not comparable. It just becomes uncomparable. And in comparisons, you lose a lot of context about what the other thing is. And when people compare, they make tons of assumptions about what the other thing is. So when it's different, they're not allowed to make assumptions. They have to see each thing uniquely for what it is. So some of these manifestos that he's put together, we talked about 12, maybe we'll cover two or three. Maybe I'll cover some of my favorite ones. One of my favorite ones, and this really made me think a lot, is we will replace presentations with conversations. So we will replace presentations with conversations. So I'll allow it to sink in a little bit. Okay. You can also say we will replace with voice what we used to do with writing. Right. Same thing. Right. We'll replace with voice what we used to do in writing. And some of the common things that we're most of the industry tends to do in writing, it's the proposals. Right. The proposals, typically, especially in the accounting professional, they contain all sorts of nuances, right? If this happens, we won't do that. We won't do that. And the proposals are really all about protecting yourself as the accountant against scope creep versus all about what is it that the client wants in the first place. So if you shield your proposals with writing, and the fear of putting writing in also increases the amount of words you're going to add, because you want to add all these moving parts and nuances and backstops, you forget the art of the communication with the client. So think about all the things that you were going to present in a writing format or even in a PowerPoint, and just replace it with just simple conversation. Because with conversation, it's about the words that are coming out of your mouth and looking at the person in the eyes. It's not about being distracted with anything else. And some of the things, as you read the book, some of the things that he proposes is that you never send the proposal out there and let people fill in the blanks and this white spaces. One of the things that he proposes is to make sure that you don't send a proposal via email or drop it off in somebody's desk, and that let them fill in the blanks about the things that you didn't cover in the written proposal, or even worse, let an internal employee who's like a procurement type of person that's like looking for a price or a service provider present that to the ultimate decision maker. So by leaving things in writing, it's not so much about the liability of leaving them in writing. It's more about allowing folks to make their own comparisons and determinations and doing this red apple, green apple type of comparison. When you're the orange and you're there in person to present your product, you're actually allowing the person to give you all their objections and address all the reservations, or say, hey, I don't understand what this means and I don't want to guess what is it, and while they're looking at you at the eye, and also while you have an opportunity to maybe dig a little bit deeper and have people rephrase their own questions so you can answer the true question they're asking. So that is, we will replace presentations with conversations. So as that becomes your manifesto, every single time your customer says, send a proposal, you say, no, right? I don't eat oysters. Doesn't matter the circumstance, okay? You say no, because it's your manifesto, it's your value, it's your rule, it's how your business works. Any one of your employees get asked to send a proposal, and there's a special circumstance where they feel, well, in this case, I should send a proposal. They go to the manifesto, which says, which we will not do this. And that's it. That's the rule. So I would say that's, I wouldn't say my favorite, but the one that really changed the way I looked at this quite a bit.
One of the things that occurred to me as you were explaining that manifesto, and that's a great principle. It's one that I teach in my value pricing switch class, but simply the idea that if I'm a customer and I'm considering your business and I see that one of your proclamations is to replace presentations with conversations, that's going to attract me if I've ever been in a boring presentation. And by the way, I think everybody has, right? I think one of the things we do in this century that contributes to death is death by PowerPoint, just boring slides and the reliance on slides and all that kind of thing. So everybody's been through a boring presentation and would much rather have a conversation, because think about it. What do you do on the weekend? Let's say you want to go watch a college football game. You want to go watch it with your buddies. Well, probably one of two things is going to happen. Either you're all going to go to a local sports bar, or they're all going to come over to one of your houses. Well, you're all gathering in a place where you feel comfortable, where you've probably got food and drink that you all like, and that you can have conversations about the game, right? That is the fun experience that having a conversation. When I hear that word conversation, that's what comes up in my mind. When I think of presentations, I think of boring death by PowerPoint. And so just think about your customer reading that. Those words are going to bring up certain things. And so it's going to help your customers go, that's the guy for me, or no, that's not the guy or gal for me. It's going to help you stand out. So not only does it help writing a manifesto help you further define who you are, but we said it a minute ago, the words compare and contrast. Compare is a better game. When you compare, you're trying to figure out who's better. But when you're contrasting, you're trying to figure out who's different. And as we said it earlier, I'll say it again. If you have a choice between being better or different, pick different. because different is easier to perceive. Better is harder to perceive. And at some point, the customer does not want to buy from somebody who's not going to provide something that is good quality. So trying to compete on quality, which is something that is assumed, that's kind of like a race to the bottom, just like a price war. However, competing on something that's different or differentiated, that is much better. So I'm just, as you were describing it, I'm literally thinking about what is my reaction to that as a particular customer of the business. And that's one of the benefits of having a manifesto. What's another one from Blair that you like a lot?
Okay. Well, I'm going to say what's probably your favorite one.
Aha. Must have the word price in it.
All right. Actually, tell you what, I'm going to attempt to guess which is your favorite.
Oh, gosh. All right. Hang on. I'm going to have to look because anyway, go ahead and you tell me what you think it is, and I'll then scan them and tell you if it's right.
I know it is, Kirk. I know you. We will diagnose before we prescribe.
Yeah, it would either be that one or we will charge more. That's another one of his. So it would either have to be, we will diagnose before we prescribe or we will charge more. So I'll give you hit. Out of my top two, you hit it. I don't know that I can put those one and two, but you definitely hit two of the top two. So let's talk about that one. Diagnose before prescribe, because that's one we've said. You know, another way to phrase it is prescription without diagnosis is malpractice. The idea that if you just go to a doctor's office and without running any tests, without listening to your heart, without doing anything, you just go, you know what, just based on the way you look, I think we're going to do quadruple bypass surgery. Hey, nurse, call and schedule a room. We're getting this guy in. Okay, first of all, you're probably going to run out of there. But second, if you actually, went through with it, you would have the basis for a huge lawsuit. And so many professionals commit professional malpractice by skipping the diagnosis and just going straight to the prescription. And what's even worse, sometimes it's not even their own prescription. Sometimes it's the customer's prescription. The customer will have self-diagnosed and self-prescribed, and they take the customer's self prescription and run with it rather than backing up and going, well, why do you think that is the prescription? And by the way, what diagnosis led you to that? And by the way, when you're asking those questions, when you're saying to the customer, well, why this prescription? Why this diagnosis? How'd you come to this conclusion? You're in turn doing your own diagnosis and giving yourself the opportunity to come to your own prescription. You know, it's ironic that all you have to do to disarm the customer's self-diagnosis and self-prescription is just ask them why. And that is the start of you doing your own diagnosis. In the practice, in the moment of asking them about themselves, they are literally playing into your hand to allow you to do your own diagnosis. And I don't want to say playing into your hand like it's something coy, but you just need to realize you don't want to commit professional malpractice.
So on this concept of self-diagnosis, when the customer seeks out a professional, right? And there are different contexts in terms of self-diagnosing. There are businesses in which it's all about self-diagnosis, right? When you think about, discount auto parts, right? a place where you go buy, parts for your vehicle that you're going to fix yourself. That is a self-diagnosis business, right? No one at Discount Auto Parts is challenging what you're buying. They're letting you go with it, right? That's their business model. Now, in the accounting world, we're supposed to be professionals, right? That's supposed to be the mantra or the label that we have. When somebody self-diagnoses and goes to a professional to solve their self-diagnosis, you almost have to communicate with a different set of words. You have to communicate, if you have the skill set to diagnose this problem, why in the world would you seek out a professional? Because diagnosing the problem, it's harder than solving it, right? The world is filled with solutions. You can go to YouTube, you can go to Google, and if you ask the right question, the answer's there. So the solution is typically easy because it's all laid out there. There are procedures, there are systems, there are parts, there are replacements of the components or whatever it's broken that you can get out there. The solutions are there. The challenge is asking the right question, right? So when people complain, oh, I can't find XYZ in Google, well, that's because you don't know how to search it. And the professional with experience, with the know-how, knows how to ask the right questions, knows how to get to the prescription, which is asking the right questions. So that's why that is so important. The other challenge with what I used to call clerking a transaction, which is coming to the client and say, what do you need? And they say, I need you to do A, B, C. When you clerk it, right, you're allowing them to set their own expectation about what the results of that transaction need to be, because you did not have an opportunity to stop it and say, this is how we're going to solve this problem. So you're also exposing yourself at taking, even if there's no risk, like an accountant's risk, I'm talking about just from a customer service perspective or from a reputation perspective, you're running into the risk that a client's misdiagnosis with a great execution from your part that ends up in dissatisfaction. No matter what, it'll come back to you as a professional. No client says, oh, you screwed up because I gave you the wrong thing for you to do for me. They never do that. So, most people self-diagnose, and you want to know why they do it. Most people self-diagnose because once they self-diagnose, they can go shop the solution. Because most people price solutions, like especially the poorly positioned, undifferentiated people, have prices out there for, you know, out of the box, you know, solutions. So when people self-diagnose, they have the opportunity to shop the solution. So when they go to the professional to say, this is my diagnosis, they have some sort of notion of what it will cost. And they'll make a decision at that point, whether you're too expensive or not too expensive. So there's a huge risk of you just saying, this is the price for solving that problem, because then you allow people to fill in the gaps about whether you're expensive or cheap without having any context about the value you provide. So you want to shut down the client's self-diagnosis fairly quick. And in most cases, you say, you can start with something like, Mr. Customer, you know, that's a very common issue that people come to me with. In some cases, we found that there are maybe two or three things behind that that actually cause the root cause. Would you like me to help you not just solve the problem, but figure out what the root cause of the problem is so we can solve it, kill the snake by the head, and prevent it from coming back? I would much rather give you that type of solution. And then that should be a rhetorical question. Most people say, yes, exactly, that's what I want. And when they say, no, I want you to give me the specific medicine that I said I wanted for my illness, you should strongly consider not moving forward, right? Doctors do it, right? No one says, hey, I have back pain, can you give me Vicodin? And they go, here you go. They don't do that, right? Why? First, an ethical problem. And two, because the health profession has a manifesto. The manifesto is
do no harm.
Right. But right. Do no harm. That's one of the, but the manifesto is you diagnose, then prescribe. It doesn't say prescribe and then figure out if the prescription worked or not. And maybe the guy died, or maybe the guy didn't die, right? Maybe clinical trials work that way. But one of our professions, right? One of our professions that has the most, or one of the most best reputation out there, is the medical profession. Probably because that's how it works. You can't just get a prescription for any drug you want. The doctor has to see you first. Now, we can argue that this is a problem because they have monopoly over prescriptions, all this stuff, but they're protecting not just the profession, but they're also protecting the patient. So absolutely, you know, never take the client's diagnosis for, sometimes.
So let me interrupt you here, because we're kind of hammering on what this proclamation is, but I want to come back to, so like on the first one, I said, one of the benefits of a proclamation that's written down and publicly visible is that it helps attract the type of customer you're seeking, right? It kind of acts like a magnet. This one, I think, has a benefit of, it kind of helps keep you focused. It helps actually, it helps you set rails for yourself and stay within them in a couple different ways. Number one, it helps you avoid risk, because actually taking a customer self-prescription, self-diagnosis at face value, rather than taking the time to do your own diagnosis, your own prescription, is risky. Okay. And two, I think it also kind of helps repel just like the way the first one attracts, I think this one helps repel. There's going to be certain customers who they read, oh, this guy's going to do his own diagnosis. I don't want that. I've already done my own, and they're going to go elsewhere. Well, guess what? That's a great thing for you, because you only want the customers who are open to you doing your diagnosis. You actually want a customer who says, that's more valuable to me. And so that's another advantage of that. So we're talking about, you know, you need a manifesto, and here's some of the benefits to having it. So let's take the third one from Blair's that we picked, which of course is, I think, my favorite now that I think about it. We will charge more. And, you know, there's several reasons for that, right? In fact, the whole reason I got into value pricing was the idea that I realized there was an arbitrary limit on my income billing by the hour. And I didn't want to be limited on the amount I could earn. I wanted to be able to take the ceiling off. And so I changed my business model. Well, that's one reason. But another reason is that when you specialize, when you're perceived as an expert, when you're the go-to guy for manufacturing companies who have problems with their inventory system based on QuickBooks in the Midwest United States, you want somebody to say, go get me Hector. And so when you get to that point, you can command a premium price. Why? Number one, people expect it. If you're a specialist, if you're an expert, people expect it to cost more. Okay? But two, it should also just follow that you've invested all this time in developing this expertise. You should be compensated at a premium for it. Probably for the first reason, because you can create better results than anybody else, or some of the best results that can be created for this particular problem. But you also should be creating more significant value, because when you specialize, it allows you to drill down on a specific type of problem, a very narrow category of problem, and just hone in on creating phenomenal results there, because that's all you deal with. So this idea of charge more, you might just think on the surface it's to make more money, but I think beyond that, it's just a natural byproduct of being an expert, of being the go-to guy or gal in a certain area. And by the way, another thing that I'll throw in here that fits in is that you cannot increase profitability substantially by lowering costs. What you can increase profitability substantially by doing is increasing price. And one of the ways, it may sound obvious, but one of the ways, when it comes down to it, that you increase price is you charge more. I know that's just, you know, amazing wisdom, and I'm going to get all kinds of comments. Wow, I can't believe you said that. But anyway, so Hector, your thoughts on charge more?
Yeah, and we would charge more, which is the name of the manifesto. It's an interesting one, because charging more than what, right? Is it more than your competitors? Is it more than what your customers were expecting to pay? Is it more of what you were charging before?
Yes, yes, yes.
Wrote your manifesto, right? That's what I'm saying. Is it more? But I think what he means by more, he means by breaking down the traditional pricing strategy that most people have, which is the cost plus, which is, I would say most, even some value pricers that are not there all the way, they do use the notion of how much am I spending on this job, whether it's time, resources, whatever happens to be, right, actual direct expenses. And then I want to add a margin to that. And that is how I come up with the price. And I think what he needs by more is not just make that margin bigger, just forget about the existence of cost and margin, just a bigger number altogether. And inside the book, which I recommend that you read, he's got a couple of ways he kind of like breaks down where that more comes from or where it goes to. So one of them has to do with improving your service, right? If you have more, right? If you have more, that means you have more money to spend in technology that allows you to serve your clients faster or more accurately. If you have more, whatever that more is, that means you have more customer service personnel to, you know, to solve your client's issue. If you have more, right, that also means that you're not jam-packing so many jobs at the same time just to make rent, and you can focus more on that particular customer job, right? If you have more, you can build in some potential change order requests Whereas when we price cost plus, any little thing the customer changes on us, we internally go back to that spreadsheet in our mind where we had our cost, our time, and the margin, and say, oh, Mr. Customer, sorry, what you're asking for changes my formula, which means I'm going to change your price. And hopefully that more encompasses the cushion needed for you to do all that, right? Less change orders, more customer service, better technology, and most importantly, more profitability. You want your customers to feel very, very secure and safe and happy that you're profitable, right? This is nothing to feel guilty about, right? A profitable business will stay open longer. You want to work with a service professional that will be still in business 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. That way they can service you, service the product or service that they did, are available to answer questions. If you were going to buy something from someone, right, and it's a single best price in the market, right? So that less, we will charge less, right? But you knew for sure, right? You have a crystal ball that they won't be in business next year. Whether or not you think you need them, would you still buy from that company or that business? So think about that. So when you make your customers feel that there's nothing wrong with profitability, because profitability allows you to have a sustaining business, one that improves, gets better, the professionals go back and re-spend on themselves, on education, right? Then your customers will get it. They'll get it. And then on top of the value you provide and all that stuff, I'm trying to like even go beyond the concept of giving more value, assuming the more value is there. So in the book, he kind of explains what he means by more. You know, it sounds confusing at first, but then when you actually break it down that way, you're like, okay, that makes total sense.
Well, and we were, again, the title of this episode is, you know, why you need a manifesto. One of the reasons putting one of his proclamations, we will charge more, is guess what? It attracts customers who are willing to pay more. It's going to drive away the people that are looking for the cheapest price, and price is the most important thing. It's going to drive them away. So Hector, we've talked a lot about kind of some of the benefits of having a manifesto. We've given examples of it, but what if somebody says, all right, I'm sold. How do I write a manifesto? What would you recommend as maybe the first couple steps?
Yeah. So if you already figured out your niche or your target market, you can simply just write it down to say, you know, we will focus on serving manufacturing companies. That could be a manifesto. Okay. One of them could be what you won't do. We will not do any more tax returns. Or even better, we will partner with tax return professionals for our clients' tax work, right? That way, and if you, once you write it down, you will never do a tax return ever again, because it's written down. It's set in stone, per se. Actually, if you can buy a piece of stone and a chisel and stone and chisel it, it'll probably be more permanent. But I think just, you know, think about the first major commitment you want to make for your business and write it down, right? So one of the things you can write is, you can say, we will only work with customers that want to be successful, right? So you start with something really generic like that, where it sounds rhetorical, right? Like, oh, wait, all the customers want to be successful. Well, not really, because then when you're pricing your services and you're pricing for success, right? You're pricing to give a service that enables them to be successful. But instead, they want to skim the service down to the bare bones and compliance to say, I'm only looking to get by, then that's a customer that's not looking to be successful, at least not through you, right? So whatever principles you have, whatever you feel strongly about what you will do and what you won't do, just write the first one down. You can say, I will do this, I will not do this, I will always do this, or I'll be focused on doing this, or we, whatever the dynamic will be. And then just once the first one's written down, you put it on your website or you put it somewhere, put it in the background of your computer, print it, put it next to your monitor, the next ones come along pretty easy. I think that first one, which doesn't have to be the most important one, that one is to be. You can start with something like, I will always price under the value I provide. you can start with something like that, right? Because if you start with something like that, that means that you cannot come up with a price until you come up with the value you provide. And that will always be your true north. That means you will never spit out a price until you understand the value you provide. So that's one of them, right? And another one could be, I will be different. You can start with that. I will be different. So what ends up happening is, if a competitor starts doing something that's just like what you're doing, if your manifesto is I will be different, then you change what you do. Change it and change it and change it because you want to be different, right?
I like the idea that you're kind of alluding to the fact that this is a journey, and it is. So for example, you're not going to write a manifesto in 2 hours, okay? This is going to be something that you're going to commit to, and you're going to have to keep coming back to it because essentially it's like writing a book. Now, we're not suggesting you write a book, okay? This is a short read. You probably read this in about 2 hours, but it's based around 12 proclamations. What we're suggesting is you come up with your proclamations, but something like, and I love this one, by the way, we will not do taxes. My guess is that will not wind up being the wording for that proclamation, but it's a starting point. But it forces you to dig deeper. Okay, if we don't do taxes, then why? And what will we do instead of taxes? And what will we do if somebody asks us to do taxes? And if we partner with somebody to do taxes, what does that relationship look like? That simple statement leads you into other things. And that's one of the things about having a manifesto with your own proclamations is going to do. As Hector said it repeatedly, it points you toward true north. So, or points you to north. So, Hector, as we wrap it up, you want to give an example of one you're working on?
Oh, okay. I did say that I wanted to maybe spend a whole episode on my own manifesto. Well, I'll give you one. I think you'll like this one. And I wanted to put my own spin to it because I wanted my customers to read it and I want them to call attention, which is we will peel the onion until we figure out what really stinks. I just love the concept of peeling the onion. I'll allow you to critique it if you want to, but I really like that one.
Well, I think we'll have to save the critique for another time because we have reached our self-imposed limit for this episode. So I will just say this. You need a manifesto. We've given you some reasons why. We've given you some examples of what some of the proclamations from a manifesto is and some of the benefits that those create. So let us know if you're going to write your own. We'd love to hear about it. Until next time, see ya.
Bye, Kirk.